This is an interview with Mary Corrado for the Youngstown State University Oral History Project by Bernice Mercer at Mary Corrado's home on October 24 at 3:30 p.m. We'll start in with the matter of your home. They'll cut out things that don't pertain.
Oh,
you know.
Okay. I was born in Italy, and was there for just less than a month before I came to the United States. My mother and dad had already had their passports ready to come, but because I was to be born, they wouldn't let her come at that time. So I came to the United States in a boat, which took a long time, and where I was quite ill because of the salt water. And I was in the hospital most of the time in the boat. So that when I came here, I am sure that my mother thought I was a cranky little baby because I did a lot of crying. It might be because of the conditions that I was in at the time, but I must have been a cranky baby because she had told me that I was.
No when wonder, I, any baby.
But at that time, then it wasn't too long after that my sisters came along, so that we were just steps. There were seven of us, and we were practically steps, about a year apart, almost. All five girls and the two boys. And since I am the oldest, but I am not the oldest child. There were two that were born before me who died of measles or some childhood disease before my mother came to the United States. My dad was quite adventurous in that he came to the United States and left her, and then came back and insisted she came. But he went back and forth about three times before he finally got her to come and stay. And when she came, my mother was never totally assimilated into the American way of life, because she did not speak the English language, and she totally spoke the Italian in the home. And so even to her death, she felt that she would like to go home, to her own little home in Italy, to her family. And as much as I tried to get her to come to Pearl Street, where there were women's groups and parents' groups and mothers' club, and I was organizing them and working with them, I couldn't get her to come out of the home that much. She was rather a homebody. And of course, my dad, being out of the home and working, he came here and worked in the mills.
Got the language.
And he got the language much better than my mother did. And he was much more assimilated and much more content here. Never talked about wanting to go back as my mother did. And of course, my mother was not totally happy here, because my dad was very domineering and very temperamental and often very had a mean temper, and might at times even throw things at her, so that she felt.
Sounds like something we were just talking.
Yes,
about.
She felt rather insecure, and she had a thyroid condition, which didn't help any of this. And as I remember, my mother is my trying to protect her and to make her feel more comfortable, and I tried to be understanding. I treated my mother almost like a sister, because I understood the things that she was going through. My sisters and my brothers were too little. They were busy doing the everyday things of playing in the, up on the hill and getting sour grass, you know, how we play house and that kind of thing, where I would be closer to my mother.
No wonder the mission meant such a lot to you.
It did. Now, when
people
I went.
People at the mission.
Right. People at the mission helped me a great deal. These are things that we don't, I don't discuss or say very often, but the mission was my refuge, my place where I could go.
Your kind of second home.
Like a second home. And
you found kind of mothers there,
right,
that took the place of the
right
part.
And my principal, or my boss there, Miss Dyer, was very understanding of me. And when I when I needed something or was upset about something, I'd go to her, although I didn't go to her too often when my dad was carrying on. I wouldn't go to her for that, but I know that there were several times when we didn't even have food for the table, and I would go and see Miss Gar, and she would take care of it and never mention it again, you know, the kind that was just very understanding
now
in that way.
Now, this lady, is she still living?
No, she's passed away.
This mission at the time was completely financed by the Methodist Church.
This mission started way back in the early 1900s, way back on Himrod, as a Sunday school. It started as a Sunday school, Sunday afternoon program of some kind, and then it was taken over by the Methodist Church and moved down to the corner of Emma Street, which is now High Street, it's called. But it's Emma Street and Pearl Street, and they built a church there. It was a little Italian church. It was called Italian Mission, really. And the Methodist Church paid for the preacher who was there at the time.
He spoke Italian,
and I think that was another reason why my parents were drawn, although my parents did not go there until after I and my family and the children were assimilated in there. I went there for sewing classes and cooking classes. And my sisters and brothers went there to kindergarten. There was no public kindergarten at that time. And so this helped out with the neighborhood children to go to kindergarten. And we were only about 3 blocks away, so that the children could go there without too much fear of crossing too many heavy, big public streets. So when the kindergarten started there, by that time I was, I would say maybe 10 or 12 years old before I really started going. I didn't have the benefit of the kindergarten there. I started in the sewing. And as I think I mentioned to you, we were taught the things that were very practical. We weren't concerned too much about the religious part of, you know, a community center run by a church. We were more about the practical things. For instance, we would take a garment and take all the stitching out of it and clean it off by damp cloth, press it, turn it on the wrong side, cut it over a pattern, and make something out of it. Or learn how to make pudding, which we in our home never had. We never cared about puddings. My mother never made puddings. Or make some things, American foods that we never ate at home, because we ate the typically Italian food. And then it was through these things then that I began to go on Monday and Wednesday for cooking, maybe after school, and then pretty soon I showed an interest in the piano, and they gave me an old grand piano that sat in our bedroom, my mother's bedroom, because we had no other room for it. But it sat in my mother's bedroom, and we practiced, my sisters and I practiced in the bedroom, and that's how I started learning the piano. Now, that was, when I say mother's bedroom, I mean it was a 4-room house. A bedroom, a kitchen on the first floor, and 2 bedrooms upstairs. And the bath was way down in the cellar, and we thought we were living high when we lived in that home. Then about the time I was 10 or 12, we moved into another home that my father built across the street, and it was a larger home, and we had a bath upstairs. He had the home built. And we had a
probably worked on it, too, didn't you?
Well, not especially. We had contractor, but we had a big lot. And
did he work on the steel mill?
He worked in the steel mills for a long time, but he liked gardening. And typically, the European type of gardening for flower gardens, the type of gardening where you had fancy symmetric hedges and symmetric flower beds and more the type that they would have in England or in Europe. And so he worked in the mill for quite a while, and then I don't know just what the reasoning was, but he began to work for the people who had beautiful estates up on Fifth Avenue, like Mr. Bliss and Mr. Beagley, and those people, and worked
people
for them.
Saw his yard.
Yes, and well, not we didn't. He didn't see our yard, but he worked for them, and then they in turn found out about how he did his work, and he worked up there in the gardens and did very well. Financially, until the Depression came, and when the Depression came, he felt that his work was worth more than they would give him, and so then he didn't work. See, and they didn't work for a long time, and we lost our 2 homes, went into a very little home. But in the meantime, what can I say? This piano thing might sound awful to some people to think that we put this great big grand piano in the bedroom. But we began to practice there. And then they offered me, when I worked at this little mission, of course, every night I would go for a month all the time because it was something I was learning. So then when they built the settlement house, the big community house next door, the preacher was very upset that they had expanded the community part of it and not expanded the church part of it, because he was interested in the church being built to a bigger building and a lovelier place. So
he was the Italian minister.
Right. And he was very put out when they sent these missionaries who came from the Home Missionary Society, and this guy and people before her, who had taught the kindergarten, who taught the sewing, who taught the all these other classes. He was very put out about it. And the church people were very angry that the church had built a community center instead of building a larger church. Now, I was between the two because I was friendly to the missionaries, who were really my
second home.
And I was between, and then the preacher too, the preacher telling me, you have to learn the Italian, you have to learn these things before you can be a member. And Miss Geyer, who was trying to tell me, you learn to sew and this and that. So then anyway, the settlement house, the community house was built then. And at the time that it was built then, it was about the time I was in high school, and she asked me.
Oh, and by the way, where did you go to high school?
I went to East High School, and I went to Lincoln School as a first grader, I had no kindergarten background. First grade was very hard for me. In fact, I failed first grade because there was a language barrier. My mother and dad both spoke Italian in the home, and I was the first one going out into school.
Older brother and sister.
And I had no one else, and school was hard for me. And of course, the very first story in our book was about Grandma going to a farm. Why, I didn't know any more about grandmas or grandpas. I had none, and I had never been on a farm.
I
understand now the contents, how important the contents of reading is in the first grade. Anyway, I had difficulty, but after it was about the time I got in the fourth grade that I began to feel that I was on even footing, and I began to be a good student from about fourth grade on. If I would like to have my record from before, I'd like to see, but I think it was poor. And when I got into the fourth grade, I began to feel like a person. And I began to feel that I could do the work, and from then on, I always did good work. I wasn't an A student, but then I wasn't a poor student either. I was did good work. And I was in Lincoln School until I was in the ninth grade. Now, Lincoln School had junior high. It went from elementary and then had the junior high, and I stayed there to ninth grade. And in ninth grade, East High School was just built, and we moved over there. The principal even came over there and became principal of East High School, so that I had the same principal all through school, all through my 12 years.
Now, who was that?
Mr. Smith. Mr.
Not Wilbur.
Not Wilbur. I can't think of his first. A man who became very important in my life, too. He was a member of the Methodist Church on Mahoning Avenue. I didn't know this background until after I was out, after I had taught, a long time. So then I left. I was in high school then and worked at Pearl Street every night, five nights a week, and sometimes even on Saturday and Sunday. When I say after every night, I mean until 5:30 or 6 o'clock. I wouldn't go home. I'd go right to the community house. And we'd have, I'd help them with the primary singing group, or the ones who were a little older, they were learning to make bloomers in those days, if you remember bloomers.
I do remember bloomers.
And I can tell you, I can make bloomers in my sleep. I don't think I need a pattern. I know where to switch seam to sew and all that. But those were the things that I helped with. And along with that, of course, the reason that I was helpful to them was that I could play the very elementary songs, the opening song for a little meeting this or a little hymn there. And at that time, then I was given $5 a month for coming every night of the week, plus sometimes on Saturday or on Sunday, whatever it happened to be. And of course, that meant that I helped also in Sunday school and church. You know, I was in the choir, and I helped and taught a Sunday school lesson. But when they gave me $5.
So you were actually teaching the Sunday school lesson, and you were only like.
Oh, we were just 14, 15 years old. You know, we always could help. As long as you who were a little younger would help the kindergarten children. As you grew older, you know, you were promoted. And that's
like
the way.
Rural school
right,
system.
Right. So then about that time, then there was a teacher who was a kindergarten teacher, Ruth O'Day, who had a piano, and she was trying to sell it. And I've forgotten if it was $40 that she asked for. I think it was about $40. And she knew that I wanted a piano, so with my $5 a month, I paid off for my piano, my first piano. I worked 8 months for this piano. And of course, we had it then. And then a woman from Trinity Church, and I don't know how she found out about it, gave me lessons. And she lived on Erie Street. And I walked from my home on East Side, walked all the way across the bridges over to her place every Saturday for lessons.
Miles.
And this was it was at least 2 miles. And walked over there, and she gave me lessons. And then I walked back, and that's how I got my music background, which isn't very good. I'm not good at it, but I really enjoy it. It's been
Made
a big difference for me. So then after I was I graduated from high school as an honor student, I mean, national honor student. I was never a very forward student. I was very quiet. Never one to join all the clubs and that kind of thing, but I was a good student. So I wanted to go to school. I would like to have gone, and I was afraid. Well, I knew I couldn't go. My dad was right in the middle of the Depression. I graduated in 30. 29 was the big year when we had
everything came to an end.
My father didn't have any money to lose as far as money goes, but we lost our home. And there was just no hope for me to go. But in the meantime, every summer, plus all year round, I worked at Pearl Street. In the summers, I started to have, we had vacation Bible school, and we would have it for 7 weeks, not the measly little two that we have now, but 7 weeks. Right, and the first few years, of course, I taught kindergarten. And the next 2 years, I had the primary children. And then maybe by the time I was a senior in high school, I might have began to have the juniors. Then the juniors were the most difficult to handle and the ones who needed the most attention. But that's the progress we had. And I think I would earn maybe $50 in a summer or $35 or something like that for working those weeks. So at that time, of course, Miss Garden knew that I wanted to go. She became like a second mother to me. I would set her hair every week, you know, wash and set her hair. If she would have company in for dinner, she would always invite Joe, who was still just my boyfriend at the time. She'd invite Joe and me over to eat the leftovers. You know, that was like having a special dinner to us. But she was very close to me. And then she decided that she would try and get a scholarship. She didn't tell me about it. But by August, I knew that I had a scholarship to go to Lucy Webb Hayes National Training School, which is under the Methodist Church and was a training place for missionaries. So I got this scholarship, and I had no money to go with or anything.
Youngstown?
No. Youngstown, I never thought about going to Youngstown State, you know, University. There was a university here. But I had no money even to go, so I never thought about it. So Mrs. Beagley, who is a very important person in Youngstown, whose husband was very well-to-do, and she was a very important person, gave me my trunk and gave me my evening gown and my first good pair of shoes. And then the rest of the hand-me-downs were brought in, and I had enough clothing to go. And they paid for my fare to get down to Washington. And I stayed down there from September until June. And then came back home and worked in the summer. And that was the thing I did for 3 years. And they gave me the scholarships for the 3 years to go to school.
Isn't that something wonderful?
And
I
then
no idea.
And I took the kindergarten course. I always said that I wanted to teach kindergarten, so that my kindergarten courses were the kind that I could do in a public school, so that I could be accredited in a public school. Although when I did it, I didn't realize what I was doing. We had a kindergarten teacher supervisor that...
Kindergartens were a little bit new even.
Right then, yes, they were new. But my kindergarten supervisor had a kindergarten right in our school, and our... When I say kindergarten department, I think there were no more than maybe 15 or 20 in the kindergarten department. So when the junior year came along and I had to do my practice teaching, I did it in the junior year, senior year, and I think I did some even in the freshman year. Right there in the school, so that when I had to go, I might be practice teaching for 2 hours today, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, or practice teaching every 3 days, so that I got a better background than if I'd gone to a university where you do your practice teaching in one time. And the supervisor...
You were really completely oriented kindergarten before you ever started.
Right. And you see, our Lucy Webb Hayes is a building on the corner of Capitol Street and 11th. So that... It was the school, and also the nursing school for the Methodist Church, which was Rust Hall, which was Sibley Hospital. So that there were nurses in our school also who were getting nurses training, as well as we were getting missionary training. And in our missionary training, I don't think we had more than maybe 150 or 200 students. So that we were watched.
You really had personal attention from your
very
back.
It was either personal attention or it was the opposite. It was sometimes too close. If I was wanting to study and we were to have our lights out at 10 o'clock, now this is not the hour, not like today. 10 o'clock, our lights were to be out. But we were right on North Capitol and we had big lights, street lights right in front of our bed.
You can go ahead and study.
I could sit on the windowsill and I could study. The light was strong enough that I could study from the windowsill. And our dean happened to be coming in at one time and saw me, and I was greatly reprimanded. So that's how closely we were watched. We were very closely watched.
I don't know if I'm that bad, too.
Now, shall I go on? Yeah?
For sure.
Now, let's see. Then about that time, then when I graduated from Lucy Webb, I ought to bring in something about my family about this. And I couldn't go home even for Christmas or during that time. I couldn't go home because there wasn't enough money. Part of our scholarship was working 1 hour a day toward our scholarship, and that hour was in the kitchen, you know, washing dishes or setting up tables or dusting in the classrooms or whatever it might be. And then I was given another extra hour where they paid me. And that was 25 cents an hour. So that gave me $7.25 or 50 cents a month. That was my spending money for when I lived down there. So that's all the spending money I had. My father and mother might have sent me a dollar or two, but never, they didn't have it. So I just didn't expect it. And so with this little bit of money is what I, and while I was there for the 3 years, I had a ruptured appendix. And none of my family were able to be with me, but I'm sure that I grew because I was able to cope with the whole thing and didn't lose any time. I didn't lose any of my credits because I stayed during the Christmas holidays anyway and made up all my courses. Now, but my father hadn't been working all these years, during these years, and my mother was sort of second place with him. He never gave her too much attention, and because he wasn't working, he was very unhappy with himself, so he began to drink. He had always drank a lot in his lifetime, but he drank more and made my mother feel very insecure in herself, so that when I came home in the summer, I always sort of protected her and wanted to be as helpful as I could. Anyway, I worked at the community house, and at the time that I graduated in 33, there were no jobs to be had. Now, even in the missionary society that had given me the scholarships, my roommate had paid her own way, had not received any scholarship, and came back and started working in Penny's or Sears and Roebuck because there were no jobs to be had. They gave me finally the job at Pearl Street, and I earned $35 a month as salary and $25 a month as salary and $20 as board and room, because they were supposed to pay my board and room. So I was getting $45 a month, and with that, I helped to keep the family. And if my dad brought in a little, it kind of helped. But then I worked at Pearl Street for 3 years and taught kindergarten. I had parents group. I did the social kind of work. Mothers clubs for the children who came to kindergarten, after school classes.
Now, how would this be? You would have a double day?
I taught in the morning. And then I went home and came back perhaps 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock. Had a class from probably 3:30 when the children came home from school until 5:30 or 6, then went home, had my dinner, and if I had another class at night, I came back. And it was a full time, and I was close enough that I could run back and forth without too much. I didn't have to get a bus or anything, I just walked. And if Miss Geyer, who was my supervisor or superintendent, if she wanted to go somewhere in particular, she would leave me responsibility of the place. Or if I needed to go something, she filled in for me. The two of us worked together. I was the children's worker, she was the superintendent, and we also had a man who was a boys' worker, and he took care of all the boys' classes and groups.
And this building was still the same building. It hadn't been enlarged this time.
No, not at that time.
It still changed until this was 33.
You mean the big center, the big community house? The community house was built before 33. The big community house was built more like 25. It was built when I came out of the high school. It was built, and that's when we had the classes there. I continued to go to the little church.
So the missionaries went out second time in enlarging the mission rather than enlarging the church.
We let the church go. Then when the community house then became very full, we had no room for the classes. There were so many. My junior department, if I had summer school and had my junior department, would be nothing to have 70 in it or 80 children, all neighborhood children. I must say that the neighborhood at that time was considered the toughest area in Youngstown.
Now, what was the composition of the neighborhood?
The neighborhood were mostly, the children were mostly Italians, Polish, Slovak, just a very few black children yet. It wasn't until I came back and was working there at the community house that I began to have a few black children who lived down on Valley Street, and they would come up and play. Now, when the children came up to, when we played baseball, and the white children wouldn't choose the black children, so I always made it my business to be protective of the black children and give them a little more advantage, where today at the community house is the opposite. There are a lot more black children than there are white.
It has really done the other way around.
Right. And I had few black children in kindergarten in those days, where now it's just the opposite. Now, the church and the settlement house was a project at the Northeast Ohio Conference of the Methodist Church. It was being supported by the Women's Home Missionary Society, but it was through the conference that these missionaries were sent to Pearl Street to work. The preacher was also paid by the Northeast Ohio Conference. Now, about this time, there was a total change in the church. The Italian parents who came there were becoming less and less because the young people were growing up. And as they grew up, the young people left, and there were just a nucleus of very old Italian people left there at the church, so that the church was going downhill, where this community house was building up and just flourishing. When I say flourishing, I don't mean that everything was beautiful, because our front door to this day is marked by children who have carved their names out, and windows that were broken every week, and things of that kind. But it was flourishing in that we had so many children that we didn't have room for them. We worked in the cellar. We worked upstairs in the upper hallway. We were just, it was just so full that we just didn't have enough room for the children. And we often would go over to the church and use it. And when we went to the church, then the preacher didn't like it because we were messing up their little church. And of course, the Italian people who were members were very proud of the little church because they had paid for their stained glass windows and the beautiful front altar that they had painted and fixed so lovely. So they were very fussy about having any of the kids, as they called them, come over there and mess them up.
Was this Methodist?
This is all Methodist. This is a Methodist, Italian Methodist church.
Most Italians were probably Catholic.
We were all Catholic, and I brought my family into the church because I became interested in the community.
We were a Catholic
family who had not been very happy with our Catholic Italian church because he was very, very dictatorial, and because the church was so far away from our home. They expected so much money from our families, and our families didn't have it, so that the Italian families had nowhere, not many of them would go that far, and we didn't have a car in those days.
Just became that.
Right. So because I was interested in Pearl Street, going to classes there, pretty soon, they said tonight is a meeting. We used to have Wednesday night prayer meeting. Come tonight. So I took my father and then my mother, and I know that about the time I was 12 years old, we were taken into the church, the whole family.
Now the helpful point there was that you had this Italian minister.
Right, and of course he
helped. Otherwise you couldn't have
done
this.
No, my mother and dad really appreciated what the minister was doing. And to me, I appreciated it because I was learning the Italian language because we had to sing in Italian. Our hymns were in Italian. All our a ritual was in Italian, so that I got the benefit of learning that. Well, I would never have remembered it. And then, of course, when I came to the community house, I had the benefit of all the things that Miss Geyer could help me with and grow up in, and I learned and I spread
in
that way.
It was helpful to the children, the Italian-speaking children, that you were able to speak.
Right,
to them.
Right. Well, the parents, I could speak always to them because I could speak the Italian in those days. I could speak it well with them. So I had no difficulty there. And the children, of course, they picked up the English very easily. I said once that ours was the toughest area. It was the worst area in the city of Youngstown. The east side was considered the worst area. It was known as the mafia nest. There were murders right on my street, right across the street from where I lived, there were murders. There was a store burnt to the ground at the corner. Now, there was another man in the next block up who was found dead, and it was whispered that it was mafia that had done it. So that it really was a tough area. And the children, we had tough children. And it is very interesting for me to see the children who grew up in our area, what they're doing today. The toughest kids that we had, tough boys who marked our doors and broke our windows, are now the best cops in Youngstown. And then the children who came to our kindergarten and then went into our classes, they're some of our best teachers and principals are from that area who came from the community house. It would be a wonderful thing if we could go back and pick up the names of those children and try and locate what they have done in their growth.
That's a wonderful idea. Do you suppose that there are roles, enrollment, any lists?
I don't know.
Left?
I don't know.
Oh, there might be.
There might be, and it would be really an interesting thing to check back.
That would be wonderful.
We have, I know, the next door neighbor boy is now in the Navy. He's in the band, the Navy band. The girl is a teacher in the Boardman schools. There are just so many, and those tough kids, those tough boys that were always standing on our little porch in the front, were the ones who are now are some of our best police in the city, and our, you know, lawyers and insurance men.
Oh, that's wonderful. We'll have to look at
that. That really would be something to do. But now, when we began to grow and grow so much then, it was in 36, and we really were full. The things began to happen at Pearl Street that were not to the liking of Miss Geyer, who was working there, and mine. We had a board, we had a women's board that was made up of all the women, of different women from the different missionary societies of the Methodist Church in Youngstown. So we had a board of maybe 25, 30 women who were, that would come monthly to the community house and have their business meeting there, and then would have us come in and give our reports as to what had, how many children we had and what we had done and what was necessary. If we needed new curtains, the women would see to it, or if there needed to be more silver or any of those things, they would see to it. But there were some things that were going on that were not very pleasant. But in during this time, Miss Geyer wanted us to have earn some money for this community house for different things, and we would have spaghetti dinners. And she would give me full charge of that, and we would have as many as 150, 200 people, all Methodist people or friends of Methodist people who would come, maybe from the Mahoning Methodist Church, from Indianola Church, from Canfield, all come in here. And it was during this time that I got to know many many friendships that I've never forgotten. And during this time then, that Miss Geyer, who was much older than I, who might have been in her 40s or 45 or so, would be called out to speak and make these thank offering speeches, or asked to come out and speak for the spring meetings where they have their conference meetings. And then about that time she would say, "No, I don't feel like going. Mary, you go." So I then began to go to Worcester, Ohio, to Ashland, Ohio, to Bucyrus, and all these different places, and making these talks in these churches for the community house. And in that way, I got to meet some of the most wonderful people that I've ever known, and people who have become so dear to me that I call them Aunt Grace, who is almost as a mother to me now. And as much as Miss Geyer felt that I was doing her a favor, the favor turned out to be something worthwhile to me, because it expanded me.
Really speech for
it. Because I'm not a speaker. I'm not that kind. I am too introverted. I am not one who memorizes a speech. I can't do that. But I think that the reason I enjoyed doing it was that I was so in earnest with my work that it showed, and they could see my enthusiasm. And the conference people, these women would call me our Mary, that I became a part of them. And they were the ones who sent us our supplies. They would write a letter to the community house and say, "What do you need? What could you use?" And then I would write the letter, and I became friends of these people who would write. And I'd say, "Well, we could use comforts, or we can use quilts, or we could use some other things." And this one family in Columbiana would can. The family would can 200, 300, 400 quarts of all kinds of vegetables in the summer and bring them to the community house and leave them there for us to distribute to the families, because those were Depression days. And one of the men would come, and he would come with his wife when she came to these meetings, and he would sit outside, and if he saw a child who needed shoes, why, Mr. Highland would take them downtown, buy the shoes, and let them go home. Never a word said about his deed. Nurse Harriet Eccles, who was a friend of the community house, just because she happened to know Miss Geyer, had a peach orchard, and Joe would go out there with his Ford Model T and fill the whole back seat and the rumble seat all full of peaches and bring them back, or apples and bring them back, and we'd pass them out to the families. It was it wasn't just a project of the two or three workers there. It became a project of the whole neighborhood, you know, many people. And we got to know them, so that I would take a ride and go out and see Mr. Highland and Mrs. Highland, you know, that kind of thing. And I got, it was a broadening field for me, really a broadening field. Then at about the,
I guess so.
How are you doing?
Fine.
Then about All right. Then about after I had worked there 3 years, I said to Miss Geyer, I can't keep my family with the small amount of money that we're earning here. I think I'm going to ask them for a raise. And I did ask them for a raise, and she had asked them, and of course there was no money. So they wouldn't give us a raise. And I said to her, well, Miss Geyer, would you care if I went out and see if I could get another job? And she said, no. She said, well, arrange it that you try and go this year, and then I'll try and go next year. Mr. Reed, who was a boys worker, had already left, and they had gotten someone else. So I started looking for a teaching job. And at that time, I was going with Joe, who is my husband now. And we went all over the countryside, Canfield, just seeing everybody we could to get a job. And of course, there were no jobs available. The Board of Education in Youngstown said to me, we'll give you a job as soon as you have 1 year experience somewhere else. So I wrote to some people that I knew who I had known through the church, through the community house, and finally was accepted as working as a teacher at Polk, Ohio, which is near Ashland, Ohio. And I taught first and second grade, and the only reason I even was considered was because I had spoken in the church, and the superintendent was a member of the church and had heard me. I think that must have had something in that he took note that I was available. And I got the job and earned $90 a month and lived there and paid $30 of that for board and room. And then after I had taught there a year in the country with first and second grade, and you know, I had kindergarten training. I had no reading training. I had no methods courses in math or reading or anything. I just went right into it and dug it out. And then I came back to Youngstown, and the Board of Education hired me. And I taught then 4 years at Wood Street School, which is now our Chauvin Center. And at that time,
Four years.
And now I had the children who lived down in the what do they call that area down over the hill?
Smoky Hollow.
I had the children who lived in Smoky Hollow, and the children who lived on Summit Avenue, who were really poor folks, and folks who lived down under the Oak Street Bridge, and among them was our superintendent, Mr. Pegues, lived in that area.
Oh, that was when you
yes,
had.
Yes, and I had him in first grade, and so that I never felt. After leaving Pearl Street, I never had any children. The type of child I was working with was the same. It didn't make too much.
It really wasn't much transition.
No, not much transition. I had children from Wood Street, from Watt Street, right down in the heart of town, the red light district. I had two little boys who were called the Overhaul Twins. They wore overalls every day. And the stories that they would tell us about the things that went on in their home. That were not astonishing because I was used to that kind of thing. But I got married and did some subbing. I continued to go back and help at the Pearl Street. I worked a great deal with they were called the Queen Esther girls. They were girls who were in junior high, in high school. The Queen Esther girls were a missionary group who were trying to earn money for missionaries, and these girls, I had worked with them all my high school days, and then after I had worked back there, and they became like a very important little club, and we would earn money to send to the missionaries, and also earned enough that we could take a week's vacation up at Lake Erie, and many of these children, these young girls, never had a trip like that, and we would manage to go up there and rent a cottage. From Mabel Christie, if you know her,
yes,
who was a teacher at East High School. We would rent her cottage for a week, and there would be as many as maybe 10, 12 girls who would get to go up there, and we would plan our meals and everything. This was their
you could get the
vacation.
Names of those girls.
Yes.
To know.
Right. But this was their vacation. This was their only real treat that they would have. Right. And I continued to work with them even after I taught. After I went into the public school, and I continued to see Miss Geyer, and was quite close to her, especially. My mother and dad during this time had lost their property, and the house was for foreclosed, and we had a little cottage that had three little rooms, one behind the other, smaller than your little cottage. And finally, we moved into that cottage. I had a bedroom and a bathroom built to that home, because there was a bathroom down the cellar. And my one sister said she wouldn't move into that house because it wasn't nice enough. And Joanne moved out of our home about that time. She must have been 18 or 19 at the time. And so she left home then, and wasn't too long after that till she got married. And my second
The changes
that I think that are the most important is that at the changes that are important is the point that when in the 30s, when the community house was really booming, it was pretty much of a center within itself. It was not, we did not have much to do with the other centers in town or the other agencies, welfare agencies, or any of that kind in the city. We were not connected in that with them at all. It was back in 33 where we did let welfare come in. Welfare